I'm here today at the Melbourne Writers Festival, actually the first day of the Melbourne Writers Festival, and I've been lucky enough to catch up with Ali Cobby Eckerman, and I've just come from a terrific session with yourself and a couple of other writers too, talking particularly about First Nations Australian Writers Network, I believe. And you were saying some really interesting stuff about writing as an Indigenous person, but also sort of trying to be connected to a bigger writing group. Because you go overseas quite a bit, and you said you're going overseas soon. So how do you make that sort of balance between being part of a local group and then but sort of being international, I suppose, at the same time? Is that...
Well, at the moment, it feels a little bit like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You just have to be ready with your towel, and the spaceship's coming, and you just get on board. Yes. That's what it's a little bit like at the moment. And it's been feeling a little bit like that after the amazing success of Ruby Moonlight winning Book of the Year. The panel with John Harding, Tony Birch and Kylie Belling was great. It was informative, very generous, and it felt really good to be sitting amongst those peers. But Aboriginal writing is so diverse, and we talked about the genre of Aboriginal literature. We also agreed it's very diverse because some writers have academia and family backgrounds, some people have family and grassroots backgrounds. And so, just lost it there. This is, well, it's a pre-record, you might be able to edit
that. That's all right. We sort of take it as it comes in Geelong, whatever sort of happens is fine. I probably should have said, for people listening, that you write sort of prose and you write poetry. You've had a lot of success with several books. Your Ruby Moonlight first poetry won the New South Wales Premier's Literary Awards, as well as a number of other awards. I'm sort of interested in that balance between poetry and prose. How do you know when something needs to be written in poetry or prose? Is there...
I think with Ruby Moonlight, the verse novel was the only genre that I could write that in. And a verse novel is a series of linked poems. Every page is a poem, but it reads like a novel. Because the massacre story is such a big history. Often denied, often not wanted to be acknowledged, and often very painful. And with my poetry, I love the challenge of the sparseness of words. So I just wanted to share the emotional essence of the massacre and to put the audience there and to remind them, for us mob, this is what it felt like, and this was the start of the nation of Australia as we know it. Despite Terra Nullius, we actually were here because pioneers and colonialists murdered us. They couldn't have murdered us if we weren't here. But all the politics aside, I wanted the simplicity of the story to be the strength of the story.
Yes.
And I think it's been proved right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in your memoir, you combine poetry and prose as well. I was wondering sort of the process. How did those sort of two lots come together in forming that book?
Well, I wrote the prose part of Too Afraid to Cry, the memoir, out in the desert. And it actually woke me up between the hours of about 3 and 4:30 every night. Maybe not every night, but I just remember waking up and then getting in the habit of just writing it down. So I think that formed the way that it's written. It's like a series of short chapters. But it also reflects, when I found my traditional family, sometimes they would only give me a sentence of my history. And of course, I wanted to know the whole damn lot right now. I grew to realise that it was such a loving thing that they were doing by giving me just a little bit, because I've been on such a big journey, and to find traditional culture that had been unbroken. was going to change me as a person completely. And they, in their loving way, were doing it very gently. And an essence of that has come into the way that I still tell stories.
Yes.
It was actually my publisher who said, Ali, we need to put some poems in. And I said, well, I don't think I can. And so I handed that task over. And I think Allura Press did a fantastic job of placing exactly the right poems in exactly the right place.
Yeah, it seems to fit quite seamlessly.
Yeah.
One with the other.
Yeah.
And it's a remarkable book and a very important story. And do you think, you know, it's important for people like yourself to keep telling those stories until the penny drops, or... I mean, it's... Do you think we don't get it yet? I mean, do you think non-Indigenous Australia doesn't quite get the significance of what that was for people like yourself?
You know, I always have to hope that that's changing. You know, if I was in front of the TV watching a political leaders at the moment, I would say no, they're not getting it. But at the, we're at the Melbourne Writers Festival, so the audience here and the conversations that are ensuing after that panel are very rewarding, and I love that people aren't afraid to come up and ask questions. So that's what I choose to hang on to, because the other part's too sad. I think, you know, part of the memoir was a cathartic process for me. It was very, after, you know, 5 years in the desert, I think, that story just started pouring out of me, and I knew enough to write it down, never expecting it to get published. It was a personal healing journey. But I'm really glad that it has, because with Too Afraid to Cry, a little bit more so than the others, it's the Stolen Generation sisters and the grassroots readers that are giving me the most feedback, where I don't think that Ruby Moonlight didn't quite reach those places, and Little Bit Long Time didn't reach those places. Oh. And I'm absolutely thrilled that my memoir is an educational piece for the wider Australia. But the feedback shares that it's becoming a healing tool for many other people who shared a similar journey to my own.
Yes, yeah. And that's the thing about it, I suppose, the strength is it's a very healing story. It's a very optimistic story in the end, even though it's quite difficult as a reader to read, but, and, you know, more so for you as the writer, of course. But in the end, it's a very confirming and a very healing sort of story.
Yeah, well, that was during the time of... it was around the time of the intervention that the story was being wrote. I was at Chichicala again, where a little bit long time sort of was birthed. And I needed to write a book, because these public servants and visitors to the community weren't getting it, why Aboriginal culture was so beneficial, loving, intelligent, and whatever they were always coming in with this patronising and minimising view of Aboriginal culture, yet this culture had saved my bloody life.
Yes.
And so that really formed that, especially that last, the loudness in that last part, that part four of the memoir, because I couldn't believe that people couldn't get. This is a wonderful culture. We should be growing it, not trying to kill it.
Mm-hmm. Asking this question, perhaps should be my last question, is as a non-Indigenous writer, I'm sort of interested in what do you think is the next step? Do you think we can sort of move on past recognising what was done to Indigenous culture, and what is the next step? I mean, acknowledging what was done is important, and maybe we have to keep acknowledging for a long, long time, but you know, what's the next step, and I suppose where do Indigenous and non-Indigenous writers meet in this?
Because there's been so much trickery in apology and reconciliation, the acknowledgement will need to go on for a long time, because people are pained, and pained again, and pained again. And so that process will need to continue for a long time.
So take as long as it needs.
Yeah. But the next part is friendship.
Mm.
We just wanted to be treated the same as everyone else and be friends.
Yes.
You know? Without... I don't want to be Ali the Aboriginal writer or Ali the Stolen Generation. I would like to be Ali, my friend.
Mm.
And the people that can do that have been long-term friends of mine. Mm. My life's had its ups and it's sure had its downs.
Mm.
And my good friends are the ones that just accept that because that's part of Ellie's journey. They don't Aboriginalise any part of it, or they don't Germanise it with my adoption.
No.
Any part of it. I'm Ellie in a complete context. They want to be my friend, and they're genuine about it. Mm. And until friendship flows across the country without blame, regret, and and whatever else, then we're always going to be stuck here.
Mm.
So, you know, I think we're maybe on the verge of people just going, yeah, we're going to put that aside. And when we meet someone that we really enjoy, grow that friendship, please.
Mm-hmm. Look, I don't think we'll go down on a better note, Ellie. That's, you know, a wonderful note to end on. So thank you very much for your session today and for spending time with me and with our listeners today. Thank you very much.
Enjoy. Thank you. And read lots of Aboriginal books. There's many around. Thank you.
I will. Thank you.